Hey friends, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today we're going to keep going on this series about deconstructionism. We're going to pick up where we left off yesterday. We're talking about postmodernism. We're talking about truth. What is truth? And eventually we're going to get to what deconstructionism is. But while we're talking about postmodernism and truth, just so we're all on the same page, truth is that which corresponds with reality. And it doesn't matter who you are, and I'm going to beat this dead horse throughout the series because this is so important. It doesn't matter who you are, and I don't care how much you try to convince me. Well, of course, all my listeners, you're not trying to convince me of this, but there's so many people out there. There's college campuses filled with people who want to try and convince you that there is no such thing as absolute truth. Again, truth is that which corresponds with reality. All right. And it doesn't matter what you say. Nobody lives their life like there's no absolute truth. Okay. If somebody holds you up in an alley and takes your money, everybody on the planet knows that is wrong. Even if the person's starving and they need that money, it's still wrong. Okay? It's still wrong. If your employer decides not to pay you, they decide that, well, in my version of reality, I don't think you worked 40 hours. Even if the time clock does say that you work 40 hours, I'm going to deconstruct that, and my interpretation of that is you only work 20. I'm going to pay you half of your check. Okay, every person on the planet would be pretty mad, okay? You get pretty mad about that. My point is nobody lives this way, and everybody knows that if the engine is removed from your car, it's absolutely true that your car will not take you where you need it to take you. It's not going to run. Everybody knows that if you remove the tires from your vehicle, it's absolutely true that you're going to have a hard time driving. Everybody knows that if you stop eating and drinking, no more food, no more drinks, it is absolutely true that in a short amount of time, perhaps a week if you're really lucky, actually, unlucky. But in a short amount of time, you will die. That's absolute truth. Your heart will stop beating and your brain will stop functioning and you will cease to be. You will start rotting. These are absolute truths, and it's self-refuting. It's silliness to say otherwise. And when people in this postmodernism style of thinking, this philosophy, say that there are no absolute truths, the first question out of your mouth should be, is that statement true? Because what it does is it shoots its own foot. You guys understand what I mean by self-refuting, right? It's just the idea that the argument, if true, refutes itself and therefore makes itself false. If the statement, there is no such thing as absolute truths, or there are no absolute truths, is true, then that means there is at least one truth, which means it's false. Got it? So, all right, here's a few more examples of self-refuting statements just for fun. And actually, most of these are the kind of statements you hear out of postmoderns anyway, the kind of stuff you hear from people who are going to local colleges, okay, because this is so big in college. You hear people of college age spouting this silliness all over the place, and you're wondering, why in the world are you paying somebody to teach you this? I mean, for real. You're paying for that? So here's an example. Who are you to judge? All right, when people ask you that kind of question, the unspoken assumption here is that it's wrong to make judgments about people. All right, if it's wrong to make a judgment, and somebody is judging you on that, well, they're making a judgment, aren't they? And so you just ask them, is it wrong to judge somebody? And of course, they're going to say yes. And then you ask them, then why are you judging me? All right. See how it shoots its own foot? And by the way, there's a lot of Christians out there that'll get up in your face and say, judge not. Again, it's the same thing. When they say, judge not, brother, you shouldn't be judging other Christians. You get that a lot when you get into apologetics. That is for sure. It's clearly taught in the Bible, friends, that we are to judge. We're supposed to make righteous judgments. Okay? What about removing a brother from your fellowship and then restoring them when they repent and come back? Repent and turn away from their sins. What about that kind of stuff? What about Paul saying Alexander the coppersmith did me much evil? By the way, he was naming names. And he said, Lord, the Lord repay him according to his works. You know, we are to make judgments. It's just that we aren't supposed to make them hypocritically. If we have a beam in our eye and we're trying to remove the speck from our brother's eye, in other words, we're guilty of the same thing, and we need to shut our mouths and deal with our own sins before we try to help another person out. Okay, that's different. Okay, don't judge hypocritically. But anyway, that's a rabbit trail. I just, I hear Christians say that to people like me who are into apologetics often. People don't say that to me too often, but I hear that from various Christians all the time, not necessarily spoken at me, but of course I have heard it at me a few times too. That whole idea that, don't judge. Well, wait a minute. You're making a judgment on me. In fact, I hear that on podcasts all the time when I'm listening to radio shows, people calling in and saying, you're mean. You're divisive. I can't believe you're saying that about them on the radio, and you shouldn't be judging. And it's like, wait a minute, you're calling in and you're rebuking me publicly on the radio and you're judging me. So anyway, okay. Anyway, let's move on. Another example of a self-refuting type statement. No one can know anything for sure. That's very postmodern sounding. No one can know anything for sure. So what's the first question out of your mouth? Are you absolutely sure about that? Because if they are, they know something for sure, and therefore their statement is false. All right, another one. That's your reality, not my reality. Oh boy. That's pretty similar to the no one can know anything for sure. That's your reality, not my reality. All right, well, at that point, you don't have to take anything they say seriously, because now just as easily you can say, well, that's your reality, not my reality. And so you're stuck. It's one of those things that somebody says that just turns into mush as soon as it comes out of their mouth. Because what conclusion can you even reach from that? Truth is absolute as long as we're not talking about subjective truth. And I probably should make that distinction. There's objective truth. If you choose not to eat or drink for 1 week, let's just say, you will be dead for sure. All right? That's absolute truth. That's objective truth. There's also subjective truth, and that's usually falls in the realm of opinion. So I like chocolate ice cream. You like vanilla ice cream. That's subjective. I might think, going outside, 60-degree weather, I might think, hey, that's pretty warm. It's warm outside. My wife will come outside, and she'll be freezing, and she'll go get a hoodie and a winter hat and pants, all right? And she'll be thinking freezing, and I'll be thinking warm. That is subjective truth, so it's more of opinion-based. So anyway, thought I'd make that distinction. Here's one. Don't push your morality on me. And that one's pretty similar to the don't judge type comments. Don't push your reality on me. Don't push your meta-narrative on me. Don't push your version of truth on me as they're trying to push their morality on you. And actually, okay, all right, story time with Michael Bohm. I was working on my podcast last night, and I walk out in the living room, and my wife, Danielle, and my two daughters, Victoria and Eleanor, are watching this Christian movie called The Genesis Code. And if you guys haven't seen it, honestly, save your money. It was a good movie until I walked out in the living room and they started some scene where they start going on and on about the first chapter of Genesis, okay? Genesis 1. And I kid you not, at first, it was okay. I was like, well, this is interesting. They're talking about time dilation and how I might get this a little goofed up. But it almost sounded like Russell Humphrey's theory on time dilation and the age of the Earth, which I've heard once before. I was holding on for dear life because it was over my head. But the idea that when you increase gravity, it can slow down time with increased gravity. And likewise, when you speed up light, when you travel faster than the speed of light, you can actually stretch time in such a way that time speeds up. All right. I don't understand that. Okay, that makes me twitch, makes my left eye twitch, and I'm like, don't know what to do with that. But then they go on and come up with this bizarre explanation for the book of Genesis. They start making everything in the book of Genesis say what it clearly doesn't say. And they go into this horrible, horrible attempt at theistic evolution. All right. The whole idea that God used evolution. So the earth is millions of years old. Day one was billions of years long. Day two was millions of years long. Day three and so on. So each day was at least millions of years. And I think day one and possibly day two were in the billions. All right? Okay. So you actually had plants on the earth for millions of years before the sun. Are you guys drawing a blank? Because I am. That's a blank stare. All right. And then you have concepts like God. Why did God waste his time to even say there was evening and there was morning, by the way, that's a definite article, the first day, yom, day. Every time that day is used, every time yom is used in the Bible with either evening or morning or a number, it always means day. It always means a literal day. But anyway, they're saying that when God said, there was evening and there was morning, the first day, the second day, the third day. That was actually millions and billions of years. But they're doing this from God's perspective, and God apparently is outside of Earth. He's outside of this universe that he just created. He's kind of on the very edge of it, right? So as time is being stretched, from God's perspective, it's only six literal days. But from the Earth's perspective, it's billions of years. All right, and so God, you know, he had literal 24-hour days, apparently. And there was evening and there was morning in these literal 24-hour days. But on Earth, it was billions of years. And so you had death and suffering before Adam. Then they had Adam basically evolving from an ape. And so there was no real literal Adam and Eve. I mean, the whole thing was a mess. It was an absolute mess. And I wanted to drop kick my TV. And that was a total rabbit trail, just to tell you, don't rent the movie, because you get so mad, you want to drop kick your TV too. But there was a good scene in there. Wow. Let's get back to the topic here. There was a good scene in the Genesis Code where a school counselor goes and confronts this dad who is a pastor, all right? And she goes in there to confront him because his daughter, who gets amazing, excellent grades, she will not get any letters of recommendation from this counselor unless she loosens up a little bit about her Christian convictions. And this counselor is very postmodern, and she starts getting on the pastor about his, you know, his convictions and about how him and his daughter believe in absolute truth. It was pretty comical, actually, how they played the scene out. But she's getting on him about how he believes in absolute truth and moral absolutes. And I might mess this up a little bit because I'm going off memory here, but, or maybe my brain's making this a little more dramatic than it really was, but she goes on somehow. I think he asks her, well, what makes or what determines absolute truth? And she gives the typical silly line that our societies and the time that we live determines truth. Okay, so you want to ask her. He doesn't, but you want to ask her, okay, so when Hitler was killing all those Jews, during that time, the majority of opinions was that it was okay and it was good and that they were lower life forms and they needed to be eradicated from the earth. So because that was their truth, it must have been okay. I guess same thing with the Muslims nowadays. They want to push the Jews into the ocean. But, you know, but anyway, he... She goes on to tell him that moral absolutes don't exist and that it's wrong to impose your views on others. All right. And then he says, okay, well, didn't I hear that you wrote some article or you're involved in some cause that's against genital mutilation? If you guys don't know what that is, in a lot of Muslim countries, they take the young girls and they take razor blades, and they mutilate their genitals so that they are unable to experience pleasure in that area later on in life. Okay. And they do this to little girls, no anesthesia, nothing, which is, I don't even know. I can't even describe that. That's so unbelievable to me. And now I'm getting mad about it. But anyway, he brings that up to her, and she says, yes, that's absolutely wrong. That is absolutely wrong. And I'm involved with a group that's trying to stop that. And he said, well, aren't you imposing your views on them? I mean, that's their majority opinion. That is true to them. Aren't you imposing your view to them or on them? And she gets pretty mad about it, and she huffs and she puffs, and then she says, oh, I guess we're going to have to agree that we're not going to come to a conclusion, or we're going to come to an agreement that we're not going to agree on this, or something like that. And anyway, the scene was pretty funny how it plays out. Maybe I didn't dramatize it well for you, but it just illustrates the mentality of the college system and how many of the universities here in the U.S. and I believe all around the world are teaching our children in these worldly global ways, this whole postmodernistic, there are no moral absolutes, there are no absolute truths. And as we're going to go on further here, this whole deconstructionism idea that we can just go into any old text and disregard what the author actually meant and just start slicing and dicing and imposing our own view on what the author meant, basically making the author say what he didn't say. And this goes on. I mean, this happens to the Bible. This happens to our Constitution. This happens to all kinds of stuff. So anyway, let's get into postmodernism a little bit more. Let's move ahead here. Reality is nothing more than a social construct. Truth equals power. No, it doesn't. Truth is truth. Truth is what is true. Moving on. Your identity comes from a group. So the more people that believe a certain thing, you know, for example, a large group of people once believed that they should wipe the Jews off of the planet because they were inferior. So in Germany, was it true that Jews really were inferior? Oh, I mean, really? And Christians and everybody else they killed? Postmodernism hates meta-narratives the idea, you know, a meta-narrative is basically somebody's complete and total version of the story of how we got here or whatever. You know, for example, Christianity would be a meta-narrative. Evolution would be a meta-narrative. It's a worldview about everything. It's about, it's how we cope and see and interpret the entire world around us. All right. And they hate meta narratives. They like things to be wishy-washy, ushy-gushy, elastic. You can squish it between your fingers. You never can nail it to a wall. It's like jello. You try to nail it to the wall, it just kind of slips down. Again, the emergent church loves this kind of thinking. They love to just spend all their time asking questions and never giving answers. It's like wisdom and knowledge and intellectual fulfillment comes through asking questions but never reaching an answer. I hate to say it, but that kind of disgusts me. I can't stand that idea. I can't stand the thought that you can't reach a conclusion and understand truth. Postmodernism is, it's a denial of universal truths. In fact, it's a total denial of any belief system that claims to have absolute truth or a corner on truth, which a lot of you already realize is very self-defeating, because that in and itself is a, well, a belief that you have the corner on truth. But anyway, in fact, they reject any kind of worldview that believes that it has a corner on truth, believes that it has absolute truth, and they think that universalizing worldviews are kind of the cause of a lot of the woes in the world. Basically, people that believe they have the truth will try to dominate those who don't. They'll try to, basically, they'll create the establishment, the man, if you know what I mean, which again is self-refuting, because right now postmodernism is what holds sway in our education system. Most of our colleges subscribe to this postmodernism view. So again, who's in power? Who is holding the keys right now? You know, the man, who is the man? It's you guys, postmodernism people, you know? So anyway, all that to say, that's kind of how that works. That's postmodernism in a nutshell. Okay, so I went a little long. Let's go ahead and stop right there. Come out to the website, youthapologeticstraining.com, and there, guys, you can leave comments and questions. I do want to talk to you. You can also hook up with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. If you haven't, come out to Youth Apologetics Training on Facebook and hit the like button. I beg you to do that. Let's share this. Let's get the message out. And so with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.